The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where every week of every year for decades in a row now, we've been bringing you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And today we are going to ask a very important question, which is, when does it make more sense to build the property you want instead of buying the property you want? But before we do that, two quick announcements of upcoming things that you might want to attend if you're seriously in the real estate investing business. Tomorrow night is the Real Estate Investors Association of Greater Cincinnati's monthly nationwide online chapter meeting. If you're listening to the show because you're interested in the possibility of maybe getting into building and development, you are definitely going to want to be at that meeting because it is a panel of folks from all over the country, really, who build to sell, build to rent, who have answered that question for themselves and can answer questions for you about some of the challenges, the rewards, etc. You can get a seat to that. It is online. So when I say seat, I mean the seat is going to be in your living room. But you can get a link to it at CincinnatiRIA.com. Also, Sunday night is the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association's monthly Sunday sit-down. And the guest this week is Mr. Chad Harris, who is a guy who built an entire portfolio of rental properties entirely on private money combined with owner financing. And he is going to be talking about the process of raising real private money, not the kind that's advertised online, that either doesn't exist at all or isn't really private money. It's really hard money. Chad doesn't borrow at 12% interest and the loan's only 6 months long. He borrows for longer terms at lower rates, and he's going to talk about that process. He was one of the speakers at last year's National Summit, and this is going to be your chance to hear from him, what he does, how he does it, and answer questions that you might still have from last year. Again, link is at CincinnatiRIA.com. That is Sunday night, 7:30 Eastern Time, 7:39 Eastern Time. So my guest today is a man who wears a lot of hats. Real estate investor, realtor, contractor, builder. And he's joining us today to talk about his favorite part of that at the moment, which is the part about building the properties he wants instead of going out and trying to find one out in the open market where everybody else is fighting over them. Now, we are not going to talk today about how do you build a house. Like he's actually going to teach an all-day workshop in about 2 weeks. So actually, I guess it's a week from Saturday on that topic. So if you're interested in like, how do I acquire the land? How do I get the financing? What do I have to worry about? That's not today's topic. Today's topic is why. Why now? Why in this market? Why is it maybe better than trying to go out and find a property? His name is Lionel Finley. He is joining us from his home in North Carolina. Lionel, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Hey, Vina, how are you doing today?
I am doing great, and I am really glad to have you. I think we might have covered something about building properties like 7 or 8 years ago, and not again since then, and all of a sudden, everybody I know, like people who have been in real estate for 20, 30 years and have been perfectly happy to go out and just find deals and rehab them and sell them or rent them, are talking about, oh, maybe I should start building them instead. What do you think is causing this all of a sudden?
Well, I would say, of course, you know, market shifts. But, you know, here in Raleigh, I think one of the things that has really turned me off, and granted, they're good wholesalers, they're bad wholesalers, but I had a wholesaler bring a property to me that was, it wanted $400,000 for a flip. And I just shook my head, and in the same area where I was buying, like, for $60,000 years ago, but it wanted $400,000 for a flip, and I was like, what? I said, that doesn't make sense to me. You know, I'm a general contractor. I've been flipping, but I'm like, I'm building now, and I can actually build a house for that. So it just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me to do that. And, you know, just going back a little bit of my background, when I first started, I wanted to flip like 100 homes a year. And now, if you come to me and ask me to flip a house, the only way I would do it is if it's a value add, meaning I can add, you know, an addition to it or finish a basin or an attic. But it just made more sense for me to just start building new because of the market and then also the acquisition of properties of what it would cost. And it just made more sense. And, you know, and like I said, I've had my general contractor license for years, and I just say, why am I still flipping homes when I could just build outright brand new? Because if you ask my wife if she's going to buy a flip before a new construction house, I mean, I'm pretty sure you probably know the answer to that. It's not going to be a flip.
So you feel like the demand on the back end's bigger. You feel like you can actually make more money just building from the ground up than trying to compete with somebody. Probably bought that $400,000 house from that wholesaler. You know that, right? They probably actually did sell it to somebody.
I'm pretty sure they did. I mean, just to give you an example, it's a house I just got the altar, probably the altar CD statement, that's just closing statement, which I know you know, but just to let folks out there, in case you don't know what those acronyms are, but I literally just viewed that like probably 5 minutes before this call, and it's a little over $73,000, and that's a new construction, and my average flip when I was flipping was a lot lower than that, so like I said, most folks would rather buy a brand new house, so it just makes more sense, right, mm-hmm. to do that, so... and like I said, just the acquisition price is just mm-hmm. crazy in our area.
Oh, no, that's happening all over the country. So that's not your area. That's pretty much everywhere in the United States. We're kind of dealing with that same thing where the numbers, and it kind of doesn't matter if you're buying to flip or if you're buying to rent. The numbers are just such that like, profits are getting squeezed really badly in existing housing. And I think that's what's making people wake up and go, you know, there's people who actually build new houses. Maybe that's the better thing. And maybe I can, you know, maybe when I do that, I can get a better product at the end. Because I suspect you get a better product from controlling everything from the ground up than I get from buying a house built in 1920 and trying to rehab it.
Absolutely. I'll give you a prime example. So there's a house, downtown Raleigh that we bought. It was a value add property. And, I was going to actually sell that house, because of the market, I couldn't sell it. I was actually going to take a $250,000 loss on the house. So we actually refinanced and kept that property in our portfolio for midterm rentals. On that house, because the city wouldn't let me tear it down because of the zoning and all that stuff. So on that house, it was 900 square feet, single story. I was actually going to add a second level to it. And that foundation cost me $35,000 just to afford it for that foundation, just for a second floor. And if I was building new, it would even be $30,000 or less. Mm-hmm. So it just, like I said, it just makes more sense to build new. Sometimes like that property, you can't do it because of restrictions. But I any day of the week, I would build new rather than fix up. And I probably gutted down to the studs over 100 homes in my time. And I would never do that again. And I always tell people, I'm like, look, if you can gut a home all the way down to the studs and fix it up before you even start making it look pretty, then you can build a new house. And I tell people all the time, building a new house is a lot easier than actually doing, you know, an actual 100% gut flip and then taking extra time, because you literally probably spend the same amount of time to build a house than you are to flip that type of house.
I definitely want to go get more into that statement. We're going to do it when we come back, though, because I want to give listeners an opportunity to ask their own questions. I mean, I've got a whole set of questions I want to ask you, but I might not be the same thing that the listeners want to know. So 877-772-9658 is the number to call to ask questions of a builder, amongst other things, Lionel Finley, 877-772-9658. You can also send us an email. Just send it over to venaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox, talking today to Lionel Finley, who you're going to hear a lot about over the next couple of months. He's on tomorrow night's Cincinnati RIA, it's called How and Why to Build New Houses or something like that. It's a panel of people who, one of them builds for rental and Airbnb, one of them builds purely for resale. We've got one who builds multifamilies. Like not huge apartments, but like two families, because that's what she has found is the best for keeping and getting enough cash flow to justify the price. It's gonna be a good panel. You should sign up for that meeting at CincinnatiRIA.com. It is online, so if you're hearing my voice, you can definitely come to that. And then in about 10 days, he is teaching an all-day class about just kind of the basics of, if you want to get into building, what do you have to have in line? Like, what do you need to know? What resources do you need to have? How are you going to get the money? How are you going to get the land? How are you going to deal with the city? Which I suspect is going to be one of our big questions today. If you'd like to text your question in, we do have a text line here at 513-432-4961. 513-432-4961. Lionel is also the new co-leader of the new construction focus group, and as of yesterday. So thank you for that, Lionel. Looking forward to taking advantage of all of your information and connections to help the rest of us figure all of this out. And again, that's a focus group that Cincinnati RIA, CoREA, and NC RIA share. So you said that you would not think that somebody who could gut a house down to the studs couldn't just build one. I got to tell you, I think when most investors hear new construction, their instant response is, oh no, I know somebody who built their own house and it was a nightmare and it was super expensive and it took way longer than the builder said it was going to build. And so it's too risky and it's too complicated. How come you're having a different experience?
Yes, I think, like, first of all, it's, you just mentioned a little while, like the permitting. So I think the hardest thing, I know just from experience, the hardest thing really is getting through the permitting process when you're building new construction. And you have to get through that permit process too with a flip. But with the new construction, you go through a little bit more, a little bit more strings, just because if it's raw land, then you have to deal with zoning and probably environmental and all those other things. If it's existing, then, you know, if you're just going to flip, then, you know, if you open up a wall, you may have an engineer letter or whatever you may need. But so I think that's probably one of the big pieces of it. I sort of have an advantage because I am a general contractor, I'm a builder, developer, and I do my own projects. However, I would also, I tell a lot of people this in my RIA, I welcome them to get their general contractor's license, because I didn't know all this stuff just by, like, waking up. I actually learned probably, I would say 95% of what I learned was actually OJT, on-the-job training, all right? So just doing flips and then just learning. And I learned more probably from from the permitting office and from the building inspectors and from my subcontractors. And I know that folks, like they said, they have that apprehension of a building. But part of the process, and we all know we've been this for a while, is finding that the good general contractor, the builder, right? And so that's half the battle. And a lot of times, and this is what I'll folks that are going to be on that the training that you're talking about in about 10 days, like my project manager, Karen, she's also going to be on that too, speaking. So part of it, the reason why I tell people to get their general contract license is because you can hire a great project manager like the one that I have, and she probably runs 85-90% of the job, right? I'm the general contractor. I hold a license, but, you know, I have a great project manager. So part of it is having a great team, and that's why I just tell people, like, oh, I don't know how to. I say, well, you know how to pass the test. Yes, okay, pass the test, hire a good project manager that has a lot of experience, and learn from the project manager, learn from your subcontractors, learn from everyone else, learn from the inspectors when you fail inspections, because you're going to fail them. That's how you learn, and that's how I learned, you know, this business of building, right, is from subs and inspectors and project managers. So that's, like, what I mainly tell people is, like, hey, if you can, get your license, right, or someone on your team get the license, hire an awesome project manager, because, like, Karen, like, I know we're FCC, but if you can read my lips, she doesn't take any crap, put it that way. So so just hire someone that's good, and then she learns from me, too, the things that I know. And so, you know, it's just, I mean, I love her. Like I said, it's just, she's pretty primarily on site most of the time.
Mm-hmm. And I think you just said something really important that I just really hope everybody caught, which is most of the times when you hear these nightmare stories from somebody who was trying to build their own home, they were not at all in control of the timeline or the process because they hired a builder who was doing the whole thing from the ground up. They weren't, all they were doing was like picking the finishes, right? That's how it usually works with
exactly.
builders. And what you're doing is you are the builder in the sense that if a subcontractor doesn't show up for 3 days in a row, you just fire them.
And
as somebody like a homeowner building my own house, I don't have the ability to do that because I'm not the one in charge.
Correct.
So
absolutely correct.
I think that might be the missing piece for a lot of people is who is in true control of the process and can step in. And, you know, I think sometimes builders, if they're having a hard time with the city, they kind of mentally move on to the next project because it's easier, and then they'll come back when they come back. So yeah, when it's your thing, maybe you should be in charge. So what is easier about building brand new than most people expect?
So the easiest thing, and before I answer that, I'll piggyback real quick. So I think one of the things that Vina said too, and I want folks to realize that the average builder has 5 or 6 projects or maybe more that they're working, and they typically just ride around from job to job. So a lot of times that may not be oversight, just so you guys know that too. So, cause they have a lot of projects that they're taking on. But I would, I think the thing that makes building new easy is that you don't, like, I don't have to put up with all the crap of a flip, right? So I don't have to fix this or that or whatever to start going vertical or whatever I'm going to do, right? So vertical meaning start building up. So when I'm starting with that new substrate of land or whatever, you know, we're going to grade it if that's required. And then once we get that inspection done, like for when our footings and everything are dug and then our concrete is poured, we're building, right? We're not going back. We're just not fixing all the stuff. I mean, I just can't tell you how many foundations I've had to fix and all the stuff I've had to fix, you know, to build, right? And so, like, if I just, for example, I've had homes where the ceilings were only 8 foot, right? And, you know, we wanted 10-foot ceilings. So not only do we have to fortify the foundation, we actually got to cut all the wood all the way around the house and then raise the roof up another, you know, 2 or 3 feet. So that's, you know, when I'm building new, I don't have that headache at all. The only headaches I have is what the city has put on me as far as, like, how high I can build the house, you know, my setbacks left and right, front and rear. And those are only restrictions that I typically have. But when I got to fix a problem, you know, to just start building, then that's just, like, that's time wasted, right? Because I may spend a month just doing that when I can just start with a new substrate and then I just build.
Mm-hmm. You get to control the quality of the product, and you're not working off of somebody else's mistake.
Correct.
from 50 years ago when they poured the foundation wrong, and now you have to fix it. Listeners, you got questions about the land development, the new construction, whatever? Send us a text, 513-432-4961. We've got a question here from Sue about how you find the land. Sue says, I'm curious about whether he is doing infill, and if so, how he is identifying lots that he can build on.
Yeah, so Sue, actually now, when I first started, I was, I did the whole marketing piece and all, and I got away from that because it was just expensive. And so I said, hey, let me let the wholesalers, spend their money, and then they come to me to, and see if it's a project that I want to buy or something like that. So now I have one or two wholesalers. I also have a couple realtors, and they'll contact me with properties that are available to see if I want to buy or not buy that property. And then we do, because we're in downtown Raleigh for the most part. So, yeah, we are which is a headache sometimes. We are doing, pretty much everything we're doing right now is infill, right? And so we do want to get further out, maybe in the county. We don't have that big of a headache, but that's fine. Like I said, it just takes a little longer on permitting when we're dealing with infill. But I don't do any marketing. I do zero marketing. My marketing right now is wholesalers and realtors and people that know me that in the business. So because like I said, it's very expensive, and for me, I just don't. I probably haven't marketed probably in 7-8 years. I haven't done any marketing. So, like I said, it's just wholesalers and people that know me. And then I don't want to say I have an advantage, because I am actually on the board here with NC Rio, so it's a lot of visibility too when you're a board member. So people want to bring you deals. And like I said, I teach a lot of classes and with the group. So a lot of folks, they know me and they bring deals to me. So
that's not a minor thing. We're constantly telling people on this show, if you belong to a RIA, go volunteer for it, because that's where people get to know you. Like everybody, I've been down to NC RIA and everybody knows that Lionel is the guy who builds properties. And if they don't know it, they know Corinne is.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's actually really, really good advice. I think we need to take a quick break. Again, want to invite listeners to ask questions just like Sue did. You can give us a call at 877-772-9658, or you can send us an email at vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Talking today to Lionel Finley about why he just walked right away from rehabs and walked right into building the houses himself. We're taking your questions at vinaradio@gmail.com or by text at 513-432-4961. I have a question here from Sean that is a follow-up to Sue's question. Sean says, why are you doing infill? It seems like it would be easier to buy a big chunk of land on the edge of town where you're not going to have the problems with setbacks, et cetera.
Yeah, so Sean, great question. So one of the reasons why we're doing infill right now is that if we can get a lot for a great price, then we will. One of the things that folks are looking for, when I say we're in heart downtown Raleigh, we're in heart downtown Raleigh. And the number one thing that folks are looking for right now is they're looking for any property that has an accessory dwelling unit, which is an ADU. Mm. And you can do those further out. But what we found is that folks want downtown Raleigh. I mean, we're literally two blocks from an amphitheater and all types of bars and restaurants, and what we can get for a property in downtown Raleigh, like the one we're currently building right now, which is probably going to go for 1.2, 1.3. That same property further out is probably going to be $700,000-$800,000. I know you're saying get a chunk of land, but one of the things too is that what I don't like to deal with, which I've dealt with before in the past, is that as you go further out into county, then you're doing well in septic. And I just don't want to have to deal with that if I don't have to, which is why we're focusing down there. And then also when we, like we have another property that we bought a property and, so we're going to tear down that single family and then we can build three. We can build three townhomes with three ADUs. And so we only paid $185,000 for that house to tear it down. Normally that house would probably cost you about $400,000. So we only paid $185,000 and then we get to build three townhomes with three ADUs. And then we have another property that we're building for a client. So with your general contractor license too, not only do I build stuff for myself, but I build for clients. And we still make a good amount of money when we build for clients. And so that property had two homes on it. And then that client was, we're building three townhomes, three-story townhomes right like on New Bern Avenue, which is like the main thoroughfare in Raleigh with the deck above and all that stuff with a rooftop deck. So that's one of the reasons why we are focusing on downtown because, like I said, we can sell for more money, and that's what folks are looking for, you know, to be able to walk out of the house and right downtown, and they can still, if they want to do a midterm, short-term rental, I mean, they're getting at least $6,000-$7,000 for an ADU per month. So so that's one of the reasons why we are in downtown, just because of what, you know, what we can build and what we can sell it for and what people are looking for. So we're, right now, like I said, we go to what people are looking for, and that's like what they're looking for right now. It's just, I mean, literally on the weekend, if you walk out of a house in downtown Raleigh, always call it a convoy, just being the military background, you can literally see people just literally walking constantly just downtown. Uh-huh. And so that's what they're looking for right now. And so that's what we're building.
I'd say, you know, in rental real estate, we call that having a farm. I have this neighborhood. I understand the neighborhood. I understand what people want in the neighborhood. I understand what people will pay for rent in the neighborhood. And I like the neighborhood, so I stick to that neighborhood. There's other plenty good neighborhoods, but they're not in my farm. And it sounds like you've kind of figured out the downtown Raleigh market. And so why do anything else if you're the one who's got it figured out? So is it the case that most of the time the utility hookups that you need are like right there already? I mean, like, are you building on lots that used to have houses on them so they would have had utility hookups?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm glad you asked that question. So the one we're building right now on 922 Bloodworth in Raleigh, literally, so the city, that when they came to the city, they did an upgrade to all the utilities downtown, all the utilities. And this house that we're building right now with an ADU, that it was part of it. But guess what the city decided to do? Since there was no house there, they decided to skip it. And so when we contacted the city and said, hey, we're ready to put in sewer and water, the city actually came and they put that in for us for free. Typically, if you're doing in Raleigh, if you're doing like a, they call it a sewer water tap, that's like $15,000 each, and we just save $30,000. But normally, it's like we want the infrastructure already in place because it's, that's just a cost we don't have to have. And like right now, to get a well dug for water, you're looking anywhere from 4 to 6 months just to get a well dug here in Raleigh. You can get a septic pretty quick, but just to get it well done, that's just what it's taking. And then you have all the other stuff, environmental surveys and all, and we do some of that stuff downtown, but if it's already in place, then we typically don't have to do that. But it's all these other factors that we have to do if we go further out in the county. And, you know, just don't, like I said, I just, with experience with that, I just don't want to have to deal with the well and septic. I just, it's just preference right now. And then that may change in, you know, a year or so of, you know, like I said, we go to what buyers are looking for just in our market. And then, like I said, that may change and then we may shift, right? We may shift gears. But right now, this is just what's working for us. Like Vina said, it's working for us and that's just what, you know, our motto is right now.
Mm-hmm. All right. Back to my questions. So one of the things that there's always a lot of talk about in the small real estate investor world is how do we get into deals when we don't have a bunch of money? You know, the no money down deal, the private lenders, the partners, the creative finance, all of that sort of thing. If somebody has, let's say they've got good credit, but they just don't have a ton of cash, is this even within reach? Is there any scenario in which they could build a house?
Yeah, absolutely. So we just had a young lady come to us, Karen and I. We invited a young lady out to our property the other day, and she's like, she has no experience at all. She really doesn't have any cash at all. The good thing is that we have contacts with lenders, also with private lenders. And what we typically do is, like, if we have someone like that, we will actually do a joint venture with them, because a lot of times, if folks don't have experience, they're like, oh, I don't want to do new construction. We're like, well, guess what? You can actually do it, right? And, you know, we can do a joint venture, and there's a lot of different ways you can do it. And I know you deal with creative financing and all that stuff too, but there's a lot of different ways you can do it if you don't have cash. Like, and we told her, we're like, hey, we have a lender for you right here in Durham, North Carolina, right? Because we already have an established network with them. And then they'll come in and they can do some creative things too, because they're not your typical, like, hard money. They're like hard money slash private, because they're lending their own money. And sometimes they may have the hard terms, but if you've been doing deals with them for a while, then those terms are more private, right? And so we've been doing deals with them. And so, if she's going to joint venture with us, she's going to get the same terms that we get with them, not as a new investor type of term. So there's a lot of different ways that you can do it, whether you have the money or not. I think the biggest piece, sometimes that folks, when they're newer, with the myth, because they're scared to talk to folks sometimes, is that you have to network. And if you network with people, right, you'd be surprised at, like, what folks are willing to do. Like, we don't JV with everyone, because just because you want to JV with us don't mean we're going to JV with you, because you might not be a good partner for us, right? So it's just, like, there's a lot of just different ways to do it. I think people just have to, they have to get out there, their comfort zone, and become comfortable with being uncomfortable, and just talk to people, because a lot of times you may not need money for a deal, or you may just need a little bit of money, maybe just that 10% for gap funding, right? And we'll take on the bigger portion of it, and you take on the smaller portion of it. You may have that $15,000 or $20,000 sitting around. So it just depends. Like I said, a lot of different ways that you can do it, and mm-hmm. don't have to have a bunch of money to do it.
Mm-hmm. But you have to have something. That's the important thing. If I were in Raleigh and I wanted to JV with you because I wanted to learn from you how you are doing this, the thing that I would go out and look for would be the perfect piece of land. Because mm-hmm. I know that's where you need to start. So I would be doing mailings. I'd be knocking on people's doors saying, hey, you own this piece of land over here. You want to sell it? And I would probably come to you with the land and say, hey, I will contribute the land. Like, I don't even need you
Absolutely.
To buy it. I already bought it. I will contribute the land. I want a little piece of the back end, but mostly what I want to do is follow you around. And then once I've done that a couple of times, I can probably go be the other side of that, right? Because what you're bringing to the deal is sometimes money, but it's always knowledge.
Right.
So the more knowledge I can get, the more now I can maybe get people to put the money in because they believe in me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tell folks all the time, I say, hey, look, if you don't have experience, it's that whoever that joint venture partner is that you're working with, like, their experience becomes your experience. When you're out networking and you're talking to folks, you need to let them know, hey, I got a team that I work with that have built over X amount of homes, and, that's my team. And so that experience becomes your experience, and you have to just talk to folks and let them know that. And I think that we had the question earlier, it's like, hey, how do you find your deals? Well, that's one way, right? And Vina just said it perfect. Like, if we're doing a JV with someone, they're actually going to go find a property, not us, right? So, and that's what the young lady we're working right now, she's actually searching for properties. And so that's just another way for us. Once again, it's, we can, find, and she, and through her, on her search, she may find more than one property, right? And that we're JV with. But I think the biggest thing for her is that she's going to gain, like, because sometimes folks always say, hey, mentoring, but you can't sometimes put a price on that, right? So you can't put a price on, like, my time or Karen's time, right, of what we can pour into someone. So, not only are they gonna, make money on the back end when the house sells, but they're also gaining so much, information and this experience from just the mentoring process of going through a build with us.
For sure. Oh my gosh, it's break time again. I've got so many more questions, and I'm sure that other people do too. And if so, they should be calling us at 877-772-9658 or doing what everybody else seems to want to do today, which is sending an email to vinaradio@gmail.com. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing, talking this evening to Lionel Finley, and looking forward to talking to him along with three other folks who are building in other parts of the country and are building for other reasons and other types of things. That's tomorrow night at the Cincinnati RIA National Online Chapter Meeting. It's available to you, too. You just got to go to CincinnatiRIA.com and grab a ticket. While you're there, you can also check out Lionel's all-day workshop on the 25th of July. So a week from Saturday, that is insanely cheap for to spend all day with a guy who's been building properties for years, just talking about, like, here's your process, here's what you do, here's what you don't start without these things all lined up. So speaking of Lionel, what is the very biggest mistake you see new builders making?
I won't list any names, but I think that sometimes folks want to build too much, too fast, right? And then there's a very prominent builder here in North Carolina just had to give back over 10 properties, right? So when you're building too much, too fast, and then the market doesn't support it, meaning that you're not selling as quick as you're building, I think that's probably one of the biggest mistakes that I see folks make. If you're like one of these big national builders, then you could probably, you know, eat a lot of that time or cost. But, you know, if you're someone like me, I call myself a mom and pop builder, even though we're building, you know, we're probably a mid-level builder as far as what we do. But I think that what I've seen, and I know this gentleman, he started actually when I started, and I always tell my wife, I say, you know, he's moving a lot faster than me and so on and so on. My wife's like, yeah, but it's, you know, it's a marathon, right? And so my wife gives me, like, great advice sometimes, right? Sometimes I listen, sometimes I don't. But I tell you what, that's, like, the best advice she gave me is, like, you don't need to build 100 homes or, you know, 50 homes at one time. So I think that's the biggest mistake that some builders make is that they want to build too much, too fast, and then it doesn't sell. Like right now, it's like stuff is stagnating, and then he had to get back over 10 properties on foreclosure. Mm. So I think that, you know, sometimes people make that mistake.
How many properties are you comfortable with having at some stage of the process simultaneously?
I would say no more than five, and that's just because, like I said, it's myself and it's Karen, and I would say we're comfortable just with that, right? And some folks may say, oh, well, that's not a lot, but if they're like, you know, $1.5 million on resale, and then, you know, on the sale, and then we're only getting them for, you know, $200,000 for a lot or something like that, and we can build multiples, and for us, that's fine. You know, we don't need to make, you know, $30 million in, you know, 3 or 4 months. So it just, you know, I just think it depends on, you know, your market and things like that. So, and then, like I said, what the market's going to, you know, yield for you and stuff like that. So, you know, like I said, it just, that works for us. But we don't want to build too much too fast and then we can't sell. Mm-hmm. So, and like I said, and it's one that I had to refinance because of the market, and I was one that I had on my own, myself and my spouse, and that was ours, Karen, and I went on that. And then also, just so you folks know, like, when you hear me mention, like, my project manager, like, we actually JV these, too. So I'm not just the GC, she's the project manager. Like, we actually JV these, so we're, like, fully vested in these things. So we're JVing these things 50-50 also.
Okay. What is the most overrated upgrade that you see people doing to houses because they think it's going to get them more money or sell it faster, and it just doesn't?
Overrated upgrade. So I always tell folks, like, don't become emotional with properties, but I would say, I wouldn't say it's necessarily one thing. I would just say that I think people fall too much in love with trends, and then trends fade. Like one of the biggest trends right now, which I don't like. I mean, it may work for other folks, like the whole brass and gold thing. I'm like, how are we going back to, like, the 70s, 80s thing? So I just think because that's going to, you know, it's trendy. So we try to stay away from a lot of trendy type things because, I mean, the market can shift on you so quick of what people are looking for, right? So it's just like, it's just trendy. I know at one time here, like, you could sell a $1 million house with, like, LVP, and LVP is still popular. But now folks in that price range, they don't want LVP in our market, right? So, but that was a trend at one time. It's like, oh, this luxury vinyl planking in $1 million homes, but now we can't really do that in our market anymore, you know, put LVP in, you know, luxury homes, just because they say, oh, well, it's still vinyl, right? So they don't want that. So
how
I just
do
think
you
like
keep
something
track
like,
of all that?
So a good way to keep track of is like the parade of homes. Like if you have parade of homes that come to the area, sometimes they'll have also the home builders. Like if you're a local market, you'll have an HBA, a home builders association. They'll also put on events. So look at your local HBA, parade of homes, all those things. And then, of course, now we have social media, which is crazy. So you don't have to leave your house to do parade of homes. So I would just look at those things. Like I said, you will see trendy type things. But yeah, it just depends. Like, I mean, I've been building for a while, and it was this new term. I was like, what is a scullery, right? And now I'm just like, oh, a scullery is like the second kitchen now. And it's a trend, they're doing it, but they're doing that in high-end luxury homes, right? And it's selling. But I think that even though it's a new thing, it's a trend, but I think that will be probably something that's here to stay. So I wouldn't say that's overrated. I just say that's more of in your high-end homes that you'll see things, but you just have to stay abreast of, like I said, go to your local home builder association, do those parade homes when you see them, and you'll see things. Some stuff will be trendy. Some stuff will stick and stay for a while.
We tend
to stay away from trendy.
Off topic, but I got to know. Colored kitchen cabinets, trend or here to stay?
Color,
like the green ones and the blue ones. I love the way they look, but I've never been brave enough to actually put one into a rehab.
I love the way they look. I think it's a little trendy right now. But like if you're doing like a two-tone, two-tone cabinets work. Like my wife, she doesn't care. She's just white shaker. She does not care whatsoever in her kitchen. Like Karen and I today, we just bought some cabinets. We bought white and honey wheat, right? So, but we're putting honey wheat in the bathroom and we're still doing white in the kitchen. We tend to just more or less stay like what we know what will sell, because everything is not for everyone, right? So, you know, if you do that, like I said, I've seen the green cabinets. I've seen, you know, the, like I said, black cabinets with all the golden on them, and some people will like it, some people won't, right? Mm-hmm. So, we just tend to stay like right in that middle of like, okay, yeah, we can push the envelope a little bit. And then if we push the envelope a little bit, it'll probably be like in a laundry room or a bathroom with the different color cabinets. But more of our main areas like kitchen, bathrooms, we try to almost stay like still a neutral.
Becky would like to know how much time you personally are spending working on these properties. And I think by working, she means overseeing, visiting the job site, things like that. I don't think she thinks you swing a hammer.
Yeah, so I actually drive by all the properties every day, and the operative word being drive by. I typically don't get out of my vehicle for the most part. Like today I had to go pick up cabinets with Karen, but and that's only because we couldn't get them delivered when we wanted to. But she's mainly the project manager on site. Like when I said she runs the show, period. I don't get in her way. I don't micromanage. She's like, hey, Lionel, what you think about this? I was like, hey, if you think that's the way we should go, she'll go that way. And then she's also an architect by trade too. So like she has a design aspect and all that stuff. So like she's married, but she's literally like my second wife. When she tells me she's going to do something, I'll go, okay. I don't,
whatever you say, dude.
I say, hey, whatever you want to do, then, because it works, right? And then, like I said, we're vested in these because we're also JV partners. And so she has an eye for it. I have an eye for it. I drive by the properties. We have cameras on the properties. But like I said, I'll drive by them and say, hey, everything's good to go. If I see something wrong, if she's not there, I'll shoot her a text like, hey, you know, what's up with this? And she'll say, oh, yeah, so-and-so. But for the most part, like I said, I don't spend more of the time. And Vina knows me and met me. Like I have my mobility issues from the military and all too. So like I said, she's more on the site more than I am. I would say if I had to give a percentage, I would say anywhere from 80-90%, she's mainly there on the property and versus myself. And like I said, I'm more there for, you know, the codes and, hey, we need, you know, Lionel, hey, what about this or that? You know, when it comes to building codes, something like that. But for the most part, she's got, as they say, she's got the con. She's got controls of it, and I don't get in her way. See, if she said we're going to do it, then that's what we do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Quick question here from Bob. Bob says, when I first started getting into rehabbing, they told me to go find a nice, simple project to start with. Is there such a thing as a simple project to start with in construction?
Yeah, no, because you know what? You'll have a property that you'll, as we call it, we term it lipstick, where you think it's just going to be carpet and paint. And I can't tell you how many times that I've had investors that would do projects like that, and then they'll get inside of it, and then a neighbor will call and say, hey, I think they're doing some work over there because of the dumpster, and then the city puts a stop notice on that project, right? And then now they have to call me and say, hey, we need a permit. And then, oh, by the way, guess what? Now we got all this unpermitted crap in here, and that easy project that you thought was easy now turns into another whole nightmare. So, yeah, I would never say that there's an easy project because you just never know how they may turn out. I've had and Zena knows Kathy Russell very well when Kathy was practicing here. I had a deal where I made $1,000 on a rehab here in Raleigh because I had a project like that where I thought it was going to be an easy project and we had to open and I had one and I went to closing and I said, Kathy, I said, this is a horrible deal. I only made $1,000. He's like, you're not in the red.
Yeah, at least there was a positive, a plus sign in front of the 1,000 and not a minus sign in front of the 1,000.
Exactly. So those projects can go south real quick.
Okay. So I'm just going to answer this last question that we got here from Mike, which is, if I am thinking about doing this, what is the one piece of advice that you'd give me? And I'm just going to give you that piece of advice, Mike. Start with coming to the Cincinnati area meeting tomorrow night. It's a whole panel of people that are going to have different perspectives, are going to, fill in your information more, and where you can ask questions instead of just me asking questions. That's at cincinnatirea.com. And then also while you're there, check out the all day Getting Started in Building workshop on Saturday, July the 25th. Do both of those things there. Lionel, thank you very much for your time today. Appreciate you sharing sharing your perspective, which is clearly, I love building with our audience, and I will definitely see you tomorrow night.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Okay.
And we will be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.